Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 3rd, 2000. In the fireside room this evening, we have David Sponheim. Today's session number is SPD 2001 and is titled Teaching Peacemaking to Children. Let's listen in.
And I did not know that I was going to be doing any sessions when I came to Holden. I'm here for 3 weeks as a way try.
we're not letting you off the hook.
Yeah, that's so. But I'm entering my 21st year in education. I've been a teacher and a principal, first in the Milwaukee area and now in the Minneapolis area. And I am a district trainer in cooperative learning and peer mediation in the Twin Cities. I've done presentations ranging from elementary schools to I did one at St. Olaf for the Para College 2 years ago. The basic premise that I like to start with is that teaching children to be peacemakers is more than just teaching them a few steps. And it needs to be looked at in a comprehensive, and it really fits with what Tom Fuchs has been talking about this week, about conflict resolution for adults or organizations is less about certain strategies and more about building a rapport and relationships and working at problem solving together. We'll be going over this kind of sketch on the board when we follow a procedure where we teach kids to negotiate and mediate starting in kindergarten. I teach in a multi-aged alternative program in Edina, Minnesota, called the Continuous Progress Program. It's for grades 1 through 5, and two teachers team teach 50 kids, and we keep those same kids for all 5 years of elementary school. So my fifth graders I've taught for since they were in first grade. We start teaching them these skills. Actually, our kindergarten teachers start teaching. We do a lot of role playing. They do a lot of talking about what they want, what they feel. The steps, it's called a kind of a conflict bridge. Some teachers call it a peace table. But my point is that it's not, a peacemaking program is not just kids learning steps. I mean, we've had calls from schools who are having problems at recess. I mean, those of you, any of you who don't have kids, big two areas of problems, recess and on the bus. And you know, they want to have us come in for a couple hours or an hour and train the staff to help with their recess problems. Or they want to train 10 fifth graders to be peer mediators. And that's, you know, that's who learns the most in that kind of situation is those 10 fifth graders, it's those 10 kids. So we believe that, or I believe, everyone needs to be like step two here. It helps kids to have a vocabulary to solve conflicts. It helps kids to be able to say when they get mad, what do you want? I mean, I want the ball. I want one of the big problems where I teach is kids feeling left out. A lot of conflicts start because needs conflict. You know, I want to play, I'm excluded today. Maybe it's Tuesday, so it's don't play with Susie Day. That's the problem I had in my room last year. I had cliques that would not. So what do I want? I want to play. I want to, you know, how do I feel? I feel left out. What are your reasons? My reasons for that is that I want to be part of your group. And then this next step is really key. My understanding of you, it's the foundation of empathy. The idea that, well, my understanding of Susie is she wants to play with us because she feels left out. It requires active listening. And then they think of three possible solutions and they're supposed to choose. Now, as Tom was saying, when kids get into a conflict, do they follow these steps down? No. But what's common in my room is that after recess, I have two mediators as classroom jobs in my room, just as I have a job to clean the boards and a job to take the attendance down, things like that. After recess, kids will request to talk to a mediator. Sometimes they will request a certain person. Sometimes we'll just use the class mediators because they have a conflict that they want to solve. Now, do girls request that more than boys? Yes. In my experience, do girls and boys solve conflicts differently? Yes. Boys are much more physical. Boys will, there'll be a flare-up playing football. Somebody will well, it's supposed to be two-hand touch, it gets to be tackle or whatever, they have a little, you know. Girls, it's different, they want to talk about it. And then they choose a solution. Does this work? Yes, it does work. And I think it gives kids a vocabulary. But a peacemaking program to truly teach children to be peaceful requires more steps than just teaching six steps or six things. First of all, it requires that relationships are built. And I think of one of the reasons I've chosen to teach in the place that I do is that we can build relationships. I'm having a girl who started with me 10 years ago in Edina coming back to student teach next year in my room. I've had at least 5 families come out to hold them because I've told them about it from Edina here. Tom just did a session on mission statements. The older I get, the more I see how important relationships are. And when conflict occurs, and conflict is going to occur, then the stronger the relationship is, the better the conflict will be solved. And I think it's certainly true in a classroom. I think it's true in any organization. Anytime that you come in conflict with somebody, if you have a strong relationship with them, you have a foundation to go forward. And if you don't, it can degenerate and you get out of your homeostasis and it gets very, very difficult. I do a lot of group building activities in my room. We play a lot of games. I believe in having fun. You know, the basic needs stuff of Glasser, you know, fun is a basic need. Belonging is a basic need. Kids need to feel that way. So the first few weeks of school, I spend a lot of time playing some silly games outside. I love to do drama. Even with kids that I know, and next year, my class, I know every single student in that class. I've taught them before, but I still will spend time building relationships. And I think that's so key, no matter what level one teaches, or no matter what organization one is in. The relationships that you have with your coworkers, with your clients, things like that. To me, that is the number one part of a peacemaking program, because if those relationships are strong, then you can move forward to the other areas. Specific strategies need to be taught. I've mentioned just these steps. We'll be going over that more later, but specific strategies. Stressing ethical values and life skills. In our school, each month we have a different ethical value. Could be courage. It could be responsibility. We read stories about that. We have a school assembly centering on that. We have buddy classes, meaning that even in schools, kids can be territorial. I mean, you've got like one classroom against another classroom that gets to be. So we have like partner classrooms. We do things, life skills is a term, skills that you will need your entire life. And you know, kind of talking about those things, not just assuming they're going to happen, but talking about those and why they're important. Why is caring? We just had a caring assembly. Why is it important to care? You know, what does caring mean? Teach social skills. A social skill can be as simple as, if you're in first grade, it can be as simple as staying with the group you're in, not wandering around with another group. It could be something like active listening, looking at somebody when you're talking. And one that I like to use a lot is using someone's name when you're talking to them. So, you know, if I know that, you know, that Karen's in my group, saying, well, Karen, what do you, rather than just, what do you think? But Karen, what do you think? Because it builds a relationship with that person. So using someone's name. With the older kids, being able to criticize, or not criticize, but critique somebody's or discuss someone's idea without telling that they're, like if you're disagreeing with somebody's idea without disagreeing with the person. Now a lot of this comes from the research of cooperative learning, and this is the kind of the premise where I teach from. I know I'm kind of digressing, but there are three types of learning, three ways that kids can learn. Kids can learn individually. Kids can learn, and this is adults as well, they can learn competitively. or they can learn cooperatively. Each of these three has its importance in schools. And each of us may think, well, when do you learn the best? Have you learned the best when you're working with someone else? Have you learned the best when you're doing something alone, kind of quietly? Have you learned the best when you've been in a competitive situation? Each of those three has its point. I believe that this needs to be the umbrella where learning occurs. And social skills need to be taught. Many kids these days are coming to schools are coming without social skills being present. I mean, without that, you can't assume that they're going to be, you know, I've seen that kids need to be taught what it means to actively listen. Kids need to be taught what it means to use someone's name when you're referring to them. And so we do something like a T-chart. A T-chart is something where you'll have something like this, and you'll have looks like, and then sounds like, and then the skill could be active listening. So, you know, kids may, you know, what does it look like? You're looking at the speaker. What does it sound like? Maybe you're paraphrasing, you're saying, uh-huh, uh-huh. I mean, with younger kids, you need to be very baseline.
I use a junior mind, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, any level.
Yeah. Parent involvement in education. Getting parents to understand what you're doing and kind of buying into the importance of what social skills are being stressed, what ethical values or life skills you're teaching, why you're having, you know, cooperative learning says it's not just saying Jimmy, Susie, Sally, and Joe go work out in the hall in a poster. It's cooperative learning is structuring a group setting so that it has what they call positive interdependence, meaning the kids will sink or swim together. There's a kind of a feeling like we're a group, and what they call individual accountability, meaning that there's no like freeloaders. Like some kids, you've probably done group work where either you've done most of the work in the group, or maybe you've just decided so-and-so wants to do most of the work, so fine. So it's trying to make sure that each group member participates. And finally, community involvement and service projects. This year, my class got really into the issue of child labor. And the whole issue of is Nike or Adidas or all those shoe companies, are they exploiting? We got this magazine, kind of a junior scholastic type, and it had an article about that. It had a place to write. So they got a couple of these got on the web, they wrote letters, they just got totally into it. And it brings peacemaking into a broader context where it's not just my individual conflicts that occur, but it brings it farther out for them. It brings it out to the world as a whole. So that's just kind of a really quick overview of what I see as a comprehensive peacemaking program. And what I'd like to do for the bulk of the session, first of all, if anybody has any questions, please just, yes.
Did you say this was a private or a public school?
It's a public school. It's an alternative program, meaning parents choose to place their children here. We have about 400 students from
the
throughout the district.
The reason I asked is just because I was wondering about that parent education component, because I did some social work in the public schools, not alternative public schools, and the kids would go home and try some of this. These skills, and literally some of them would get hit, you know.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, so you do tell the parents this is what, and they basically agreed that the kids are going to be using this, and then do they agree to foster those things at home also, or do you do some parent education?
We do parent education nights. We do an evening on cooperative learning, which I'd like to model with this group. We've done some sessions on what they call a brain compatible or brain instruction. You know, how the brain learns best when it's processing information, with someone, the idea, the importance of students not just working totally independently.
But I'm someone that I want, I feel.
Oh yes, and that's sent, that sent home, and it's something that, we're fortunate that our school as a whole is, has all the teachers that are in the building that I work do stress that. So it's kind of the teachers and all stress that, and parents know that that's sort of a real emphasis of the school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that can be a different, I mean, you have parents will tell their kids, yeah, if so-and-so pushes you, you push them back. Show them you're not. I mean, I coach in Edina. I coach basketball. I've coached Edina for 10 years, and Edina, if you know Minnesota, it's very competitive athletically. And I had a kid of mine this year, actually I was coaching a group of juniors to be seniors at a national AAU tournament, which is a select tournament. It was in Detroit. Best juniors in the country were there. My kid hit him back. I go, you can't retaliate. And he goes, no, my dad told me if some guy hits me on the court, I should hit him back harder so he doesn't think that he can. And basketball game is a different, it's not analogous to life or the classrooms, but that mentality is out there. Yeah. So what I would like to do is I know that everybody kind of sometimes comes to these sessions and likes to kind of find their little place and kind of be filled with knowledge. But I'd like to make this a little bit more interactive. So what I would like to do is to put you in something that I, and I'm not going to make anybody get in front and act out or anything. So because I know I've been told by certain who will remain anonymous that they will just get up and leave if that happens. But I would like to put you in something that's called a base group. And a base group is a way that in my classroom I organize students when they come in, they check in with their base group. It's where they take attendance. It's where they process the day. It's where they feel that sense of belonging. And what I'm trying to do by this is to make you see that, or to through actions see that peace, teaching children to be peaceful is more than just teaching them to use these steps. It's teaching them to care about other people. It's teaching them, it's allowing them to role play and to feel a part of a community. And a community in my classroom, a community in school. One of the things here at Community Involvement Service Projects, each year we go to a senior citizen's home and sing. We make cards. We did what they call a candy grams, meaning that the parents bring in candy, the kids sell them on Valentine's Day for whatever, 50 cents. Kids get to write on them. We made $700 for an AIDS hospice. Just trying to get kids to understand that the world, especially in the community I teach in, Edina, is just quite wealthy. So you're trying to see kids to go beyond just their own situations, their own, you know, spending $1,200 for hockey equipment or whatever, which is the norm. So anyway, what I'm going to do is number you off. Now the people are up on the top can be their own base group, and here, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 24. So I think I'm going to number you off by sixes. So we're going to have four people in a group. And if this feels too much like school, I feel the same way because I came away here to get away from school. So bear with me on that, please. So we're going to number you off by sixes. You're going to be with three other people and yourself. And then we're going to do a couple of activities in the group. We're going to kind of, I have some questions I'm going to want you to answer, and then we're going to try to practice these steps a little bit, and then we'll do a little reviewing. Okay?
You bet.
Okay, so let's just start back here.
One.
Oh, is this going? Okay.
Two.
Three.
Up here?
Four.
Five.
Six.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four.
Five.
Six.
One.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four. Five.
Six.
One.
Two.
Three.
Four.
And I guess the fives and the sixes I must have miscounted. We'll have a little.
No.
They were being quick. Thank you for realizing that over there. Five, six. There's always somebody in the crowd, isn't there? There's always some. If we could have the, now one of the premises of cooperative learning, I'll just go over this quickly, goes into the idea of pig's face, how I remember it. The P is for positive interdependence. And with that, interdependence. I understand they have classes now in education on writing on the board. I was there, they did not have those.
Because you're writing and talking into the board at the same time.
That's true. Thank you. See, I just had
this. And what number was
that? Yeah, what number? Number five, I remember. It's called individual accountability. The G is called group processing. The S, social skills, and the F is called face to face. And I can write this down if anybody could. But what I'm hope your group will be face to face in the forest and not kind of just like, but kind of knee to, what they say, knee to knee, eye to eye. That's kind of the education jargon of kind of facing each other so that we can have some interaction. So I just took 9 credits from the University of Minnesota on brain research this before I came out here, and it's amazing what brain research says about how people learn. And the idea about, and I teach the same kids year after year, it's amazing what they forget. And you know, kids learn when they're emotionally involved and emotionally present, and they learn, and the brain needs to process new information every 15 minutes or else it will forget it. And I don't know about some of you in here, but some of the worst modeling I've seen is when I've gotten farther along in graduate school. I'm about 2 classes short of my PhD at the university. And my advising professor is a professor of cooperative learning, or social psychology actually, but I spent a symposium with him where it was just complete lecture format for several hours. And I don't know about you, but I just basically kind of just start vegging out. And so the idea of cooperative learning as part of a peacemaking program is that it gets kids interacting. Not only does that build relationships, but it enhances learning. We do a lot of like turn to your neighbor or turn to your base group and talk about what were three reasons why the North and the South had in the Civil War, or what are differences between metamorphic and igneous rock or something. The idea that kids learn better when they're processing information, that also builds relationships. If you just want to, if we have a group that wants, if somebody kind of has a coherent statement or else, let's just popcorn out ideas and we'll just put them up in a web here of the idea of peace. Any group want to start?
Cooperation.
Anybody else want to come up with any words that
your compatibility?
Compatibility.
Homeostasis.
We learned something this week.
More the idea of more inner peace as opposed to lack of conflict.
Or resolution.
Resolution of conflict, yeah.
Okay, good one. I like that. This is very good.
Or also an investment in not not just lack of, but an investment in building a relationship or building
a
peace.
I love that idea, an investment
in that state of peace, or the idea that it's a process.
Like investment in relationships?
Yeah. Whether that's a whole country or an identity or just one-on-one or what.
Anybody else want to?
Maybe confidence that the relationships will involve resolution or cooperation.
So stick with it.
Confidence that that will be resolved.
Sticking with it.
It's almost the trust.
It's like that maybe that the relationship is stronger than any kind of the relationship is more important than the individual conflict.
How about quiet?
Quiet?
Yeah.
Yeah. They go together.
And it's quiet.
Harmony and or serenity.
Harmony,
serenity.
Being accepting of everyone.
Accepting differences. I don't think it's an accident that most of the violence, much of the violence that's happened in schools in the last few years, is lots of that has been because of students not feeling accepted. They felt shut out, and they were not at peace. They were obviously were not at home in stasis. Another thing that Tom talked about is conflict, and that's something that I've believe strongly in as well, is that in a healthy relationship, conflict is going to come up sometimes. It's how one deals with conflict. And he used the example of those animals yesterday, and his, the owl and the fox and the shark and the teddy bear dealing with conflict. I mean, I see that in my students on roles that they play. And I think what I want to do is try to get, I love those two words he used, empowerment and recognition. So that students feel recognized in a classroom. If this were a classroom, we'd be sitting in these groups and I would be given, we would have like, you'd each make a poster. They would be thematically, like if we were studying about Holden Village, you might be the miners or you might be the bears or something. And it's a way to have your basic needs, hopefully, that you'll feel, because if you feel centered, if we're in a sense of homeostasis, we are going to solve conflicts better. And I guess that's kind of my bottom line for this session, is that teaching children to be peacemakers, yes, we have these steps that, if we do get into a conflict, but it's also empowering students and recognizing students so that they feel at home in a classroom, or that they feel at home in a family, they feel at home in their church. I mean, one of the things, as I raised it here, community involvement, a man named Peter Benson at the Search Institute, which is out of Minneapolis, has done a lot of research on what children need when they're growing up. He terms them assets. He's identified close to 20 assets that kids must have or can have. The more assets you have, the more likely you are to be successful. Obviously, a caring mother, family is important. But one of the ones that he identified as being the strongest is involvement in a kid's life of a caring non-parent adult figure. Something like that. It can be a coach, a Sunday school teacher, an uncle, next door neighbor, something like that. But that's really important. And I know in my life, my father's a Lutheran pastor. And I, unfortunately, to this day, don't get a very positive or a very authentic worshiping experience when my dad's in front of the congregation. I just don't. However, we had an intern when I was about 16 or 17 that I just clicked with. It turned my life around. It got me involved in the church, and it really did. it made me more willing to seek peace, and in all these different ramifications of it, because I had that in my life. And I think that's, you know, that the community involvement service projects can be both the going out from a kid to the community and also having the community come in. Like in our school, we have volunteer readers. We have senior citizens who come in and read to the kids. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And it really helps the kids to function. Okay, we're going to turn to our base group now. Next, I would like you to, in your group, discuss what you think is your favorite food here at Holden Village. Your favorite food in Holden Village. Groups, we're going to have the person in your group who got up the latest this morning, who slept in the longest, is going to be the spokesperson, and I would like them to share four foods that your group came up with in a couple minutes. Okay, so the person who slept in the longest. Okay, can we just kind of go around the group and have the spokesperson just blurt out a couple of the foods that came up in your discussion? Can we start over here?
Calzones.
Spicy Thai meal.
The salad dressing. And the bread.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Beer for the spinach lasagna, the spicy Thai noodles, and bread.
The bread. Thank you.
Ice cream.
I can smell this a little more.
That was kind of a consensus in the group?
No, I like the bread. What else do you get?
Lasagna.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, the bread was high on the list, and the spicy Thai, the lasagna, hummus.
I'm getting hungry again.
Everything was said except for mine, which was the chocolate chip oatmeal bars that we could go. And one other thing, Noel said he liked the couscous. And the other people, it's already been said, spicy time puzzle.
Is it tapatio or what is the?
I don't know, but it's good.
The Royal Ancherries.
Oh, those
were very good. Ham and burritos.
Great. Yes, very good. Okay.
For coffee break.
Next, what I would like to try our groups to do is to use some of these strategies and to try and come up with a
I'm not going to have a group having to get up in front and act it out. So no, we will not go there. We will not. But if you could, in the group, if you want to pretend that your children, or do something that could happen in real life in a work situation, but attempt to use some of these steps. The first step in solving a conflict is to state what you want. What is your need? What is it that's causing you, frustration? The kids learn these and they can negotiate with these. They sometimes don't need a mediator. And I think, my main point is that peace education needs to be comprehensive. It needs to be encompass a lot of different areas for children. It is important to teach them strategies to when they get mad. And one of the first strategies is to say, what's the matter? What do you want? So the second one is how do you feel? I wanna play video games in my room. And I feel like it's not fair that I always have to do the dishes and my sister doesn't. That was my when I was growing up. Didn't have video games when I was growing up, but I remember feeling that way. And what are your the next is reasons that why do you feel that way? And then the fourth step is trying to paraphrase what the other person's side of the story is. This is so important, and I think it's a wonderful step to teach children. We have a curriculum around this program, and I didn't bring my stuff with me because I didn't know I was going to be doing this, but I have my address here. I would put my email, but our email system is being switched over this summer to Microsoft Outlook. But if any of you are in education or would like any of these materials, I would be glad to to get them to you if we have any teachers or any people here. There's a curriculum where each of these steps is investigated in the classroom and the kids practice and so forth. But my understanding of you, so like if I'm having a conflict with Noel and I want to take Monday off, we both worked in the hike house, which we did last summer, and he wanted that too. So we were going to talk about this. And my understanding of you, Noel, is that you want to take Monday off because you were going to go hiking with a couple of your friends who were here just for these 2 days. So I might, say that. And he'd have to say what my side of the story was. It's that reflective listening. And it's really powerful. Because then even if I would compromise and reach this step, the possible solutions and the choosing one, even if I decide that, Noel, maybe hearing Noel's side makes me think, it makes it easier for me to compromise. Again, that doesn't happen all the time, but being able to at least understand what the other person's thinking. Like the reason they stole the ball at recess is because they wanted to play, not because they're just being a jerk. I've seen this work a lot with kids. I mean, it really helps when they understand what the other person's side of the story is. And it builds the critical thinking skill that there's more than one, it's more than just one side of the story. There's a variety of perspectives. There's a whole perspective taking there, that it's not just one. And in peacemaking, that's huge. Look at all the conflicts that happen in our world today, where you've got a one mindset, and they don't understand the point of view of the other mindset. I mean, the negotiations just a few weeks ago at Camp David were a perfect example. That conflict has been going on for 50 years, longer. How wonderful it would be if they could always understand, perspective taking like that.
What I was going to add to that too is that the component there is that to also teach, to tell kids or ourselves that you don't have to say you're agreeing with them now in order to say you understand what they're saying. And I think a lot of people hold out until I feel like I can agree with them. I'm not going to show that I understand them. So you can show understanding before you're saying, I agree with
right.
you. That those two things aren't the same.
Yep. That's an excellent point.
Just something to add with my students, too. A lot of times if I listen to what they want to feel first,
then their feeling affirmed helps them cool down a little bit.
Totally.
And totally say, okay, now I know that somebody's listening to me.
A couple days ago, I had a meltdown in the dining hall. I literally had a meltdown. I just lost it for about 5 minutes. I had worked the late shift. I didn't get out of there until 7:45. I missed half of Vespers. And then I had to be at work at 5:30 the next morning. And there were just two of us, and it was just chaos. And Nikki, who's my area head, I just was just fry. I was just, you know, like, I was having all these negative thoughts. This is unfair. I'm working harder than other people are working. I'm not able to have any fun, blah, blah, blah. I shared that for 5 minutes, got out of my system, like you said, and it's like, I just felt totally relieved. It's like, and she just listened to me and kind of affirmed me. And then I felt a little guilty afterwards, but I was.
She has left the village.
Yeah. She has left the village.
No, you're the area head.
Yeah. But it made me feel like at least that someone understood how I was feeling. I was recognized, and I have since felt empowered because I've kind of. Well, I've had some time off. I understand that it's in. It again, just listening. Kids sometimes, and adults, it's the same way. They need to vent, and they need to say what I want. I mean, this is how I feel. This is how I feel. I've learned that in parent conferencing, which is, and ironically, or not ironically, but you know, in coaching, I get into far. And this is an interesting point. I have taught for 20 years, and I have coached for 20 years. I have had more intense conflict with parents in coaching than I have in teaching. And I will tell you why. It's because there is not as much time taken in coaching to build relationships. In teaching with kids and with parents, we stress relationships. We go to environmental camp twice a year. Once I take them tent camping, once we go to environmental ed centers for a week. Like in Minnesota, we go to Wolf Ridge, which is up on the North Shore. You know, we do potlucks. We do where the parents come and we do parent information nights. We really work on that. In basketball, I get called 10 o'clock at night about why are you playing my kids much in the fourth quarter? In your face type of conflict. In your face. And I mean, and we all know, you know, what just happened out in Mount Boston area about a month ago, where these two hockey dads killed each other. Or one guy literally beat the man to death in front of his own kids. There's a great article in the early July Sports Illustrated on parent conflicts in sports. It talks about 4-year-old T-ball and how parents get in physical confrontation. It talks about referees who won't work anymore. So it's an excellent article. It's scary. Why? It's because relationships aren't present. So anything that we can do to build those relationships. It also shows that a lot of people are walking around not in a state of homeostasis. They're walking around skewed and they're just waiting. I mean, they're not centered. If anybody would like any of this information, you know, please let me know. I would be happy to send that out. One final assignment here, or go in your base group, and then we'll bring it back together. I would like you to brainstorm all the different reasons why children need to, in today's world, why it's important in today's world for children to have peacemaking skills. Why is it important? Or taking the other, in schools, you could look at it this way: why should it be part of schools and not just reading, writing, arithmetic? I mean, if somebody's coming and say, well, what in the world? Why aren't you teaching them, why aren't you reading out of the textbook or whatever? Why is it important and I have my own list. I'd just like to see what you generated. So just spend a couple minutes, and if you could brainstorm why teaching children these are important. Okay, let's bring it back together. And okay, what are some reasons that we found about why it's important to, or why it's a good thing to do this? Any groups come up with any?
Sure.
No?
Because in many cases there is no model at home.
Yep.
Or the model is, I'm going to kick your butt, you know, that's what you should do to anybody else that messes with you also.
Yep.
You could seem to be able to get a hold of very, very destructive buddies.
More weapons available.
More destructive.
Yeah.
And violence is so pervasive.
The whole concept of the media.
Right.
TV.
I also think even in the populations where kind of more of the, maybe they do have good role models at home, we're experiencing a breakdown of neighborhoods. We don't play with 20 kids out, kick the can until dark. Yeah. As much anymore. And so school is a setting where you get all the kids together at once. Like I was saying, it's like you vaccinate them and it's you, right? It's like you've just got them all there. It's like a public health thing, you know? So
even in, like in the communities I teach in, the kids are driven around all day during the summer to soccer camp, swimming lessons, you know, this, you know, the kids roam in the neighborhoods. I don't know if that's true in what's it like in small towns, but it's really changed from when I was a kid. Yeah. Any other? We have the models at home are breaking down, more weapons and more destructive weapons available, the influence of media and television, the neighborhood breakdown, the changing dynamics of our culture and how it's affected neighborhoods and kids playing together.
Besides the neighborhood breakdown, you've got your neighborhoods are much more mixed than they were in the past in terms of cultures.
Okay.
And then, so they're exposed to these cultures at a much younger age, cultural differences like Muslims or, you know, different races or that sort of thing at a much younger age because they're all together in the schools now.
How about on a more positive note, if you're teaching them skills that will teach them to be successful in their mm-hmm. life.
Yep, their life skills. I know Tom mentioned a lot the book Emotional Intelligence, and I'm going to be doing a session Saturday morning on the concept of multiple intelligences, not just verbal linguistic or mathematical logical, which tend to be what IQ is based on. But the idea that social skills are so important, EQ is so important in the job place now. Like even in computer work, you work with a team. And I have a really good friend who's quite high up at West Publishing in the Minneapolis area, and he's a computer programmer. He leads a team of 8-9 people, you know, several women, and they work together as a kind of a brainstorming team and a team that goes out to solve problems that other sites are having as a team. And you've got to be able to work together, even in the sciences.
And I saw that listed as something that in an employment magazine is something that, you know, the modern thing that employers are really looking for is people who know how to work in groups.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a trend, and that's what they teach in business school. Come out of business school without knowing how to do a group project, and that's all your projects are done pretty much because that's what organizations expect.
And like I mentioned in the start, this idea of cooperative learning is a way to, you know, our groups here were really, really successful. I mean, you all stayed with your group. Nobody walked out to get a drink. Nobody's got a joke. We talk a lot about what it means to be on task. I didn't hear anybody talking about what they're going to be doing, what kind of ice cream they're going to get tonight. Well, maybe that's all we might have done.
It was on task.
Yes, yes. But the idea that these skills that groups need to be successful must be taught. They must be taught. And that's one of my big crusades in teacher education is we're a lab site for the University of Minnesota. And that, you know, we stress with student teachers is you must teach kids how to be successful working in groups. You can't just turn them out in the hall and say, go make a poster. It just won't happen. You have to list the criteria that, you know, make sure each kid's contributing, things like that. That will build relationships, and that will make your classroom more peaceful. And it will give the kids relationships, they will feel empowered, and they will feel recognized. And then when they do come up, when conflicts do occur, if they have those steps that I had before, that I want, I feel, my reasons, things like that, those, my understanding of you, let's think of three solutions and let's pick one. Then they have something to fall back on. And like I mentioned earlier, like Tom mentioned, when the conflict occurs, we downshift. We want to fight or flight. And so, it, you know, settle down, but then invariably, after recess is over in my specific case, or, I mean, I have a workplace issue that I need to go back to. I'm a teacher, and we're going to, in our school, we have a mediation that we're going to, a couple of staff members are having some trouble. And we'll use basically that those steps. We won't, you know, get tied to that, but at least it gives you a format to use.
So. David, do you feel like you could do this in a school that wasn't all cooperating on doing this? Could you do this in your own classroom and just a regular school pretty effectively?
Yes. I think that the climate of the school is really critical. I think that, you know, like Noel, who teaches in St. Paul, and I don't know if we have any other teachers here, but, you know, that the climate the kids come from might dictate a little bit on what you know, what style you use, or but I think, you know, simple things like turn to your neighbor, or teaching some social skills, T-charts, getting kids involved with the world outside of their own place, finding, like brain research says that we must find hooks in the brain to fit things, finding, you know, kids like shoes, like they like Nike shoes. Kids can relate to having to work, a lot of them. Can kids relate having to work for 12 hours a day a nickel an hour or something? The idea that could turn, I mean, finding something that get them connected to kind of broaden that. I think this can work in any setting. I think it may have to be tailored to where the kids are at some, but it so the idea, just to wrap up, because I know we're starting in a few minutes, peace. I love these definitions of peace, but the idea of peacemakers, I think kids, children at peace with themselves, at like self-concept, self-esteem, and at peace with others, with their classmates, with their parents, with their friends, with their siblings, and at peace with the world, understanding that there are, you know, what it means to be involved with what's going on in the world. I think those are all concepts of peacemaking with kids, kind of nurturing relationships, build, you know, giving them a framework of conflict, and taking it outside in the community and in the world. So, are there any other questions or comments anybody has? Mr. Tom.
I just wanted to make a comment on the climate of the school, and while you can make these programs work, teachers who invest in them and really commit to them are fighting an uphill battle in some schools, particularly if the climate isn't very strong, or if the climate is one of domination, or, you know, we all know the principals who, you know, think it's cool that they can clear a hallway just by walking down it. Or at least I've seen it in schools. So the climate of the school really does affect your ability to do it, not that you can't do it. So just to recognize that sometimes there's some pretty strong norms that says this is how we do it here.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more with that.
Except at Dave's school.
That's not yeah. Just within the school, that's also the home life or the community of kids.
Exactly.
Especially in my building, because it would be a serious uphill battle.
So I invite you in any small way you can to help children become more peaceful. Whether it's, you know, working with them to in
in self-esteem or in relationships you have with them, or in relationships they have with other kids, or showing them that there are issues in the world that we need to work for peace through. So,
thank you
for coming.